Introducing Paddy Power's Beat the Drop. We're giving every customer 30 days free entry and a grand up front. It's up to you to keep it. All you have to do is answer 10 questions correctly. Play now at beatthedrop.paddypower.com.
Hi there, a warm welcome to the Racing Post Football Postcast. The team this week is Bruce Millington, Mark Langdon, Dan Childs and Paddy Power's Jason Murphy. So three fantastic judges and me. We have got an orgy of Premier League football. There is live Premier League football on, I think, five of the next 6 days because there's a full midweek programme. We will be looking ahead to them, but we will be getting stuck into primarily all the action that takes place Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Hopefully the boys are absolutely full of great bets and, of course, they will pick their naps as well. As ever, before we get stuck into the matches, we'll chat football and talk about some of the big talking points. Rather than six questions this week, I've gone for four questions and you can all answer them because I think we've got some good burning issues and I'd like to get a good variety of views from you three wise men. So, so we will start off by asking what everybody learned from the midweek Champions League games. Dan, what was your big takeout?
Well, I'll say things that you learn is things that change your opinion. And my opinion before the PSG and Liverpool game, I had a much higher opinion of Liverpool's chances and a much lower one of PSG's. Having seen, I've seen the highlights, I've got to be honest, because I watched Spurs run at the same time. So I was watching Spurs Inter, but it looked like PSG were worthy winners and they were carving them apart really offensively on the break. And I mean, they tried to put Gomez, didn't they, at right back instead of Alexander-Arnold to be a bit more defensively secure. Brought in an extra midfielder, Milner, but it still didn't really work. And, you know, they were taken apart and didn't really offer much going forward. So I would say PSG on that. And it looks like they're going to win the group as well now, which is, if you think Liverpool are going to beat Napoli.
Well, that's a fair old assumption.
It's a big assumption, but
it's probably
an odds-on shot that they'll do that. And from PSG's point of view, if you're looking at them now as a possible winner, what's always happened to them is they get the last 16, they get a massive, really difficult draw, and it kind of, you know, it doesn't give them a chance to sort of settle into the knockout stages and make a bit of a run. This time, there's a chance, better chance, if they win the group, that they're going to get a better draw. So it improves the chances of that. Liverpool, I don't know, I'd worry about them. They just seem to be, performance-wise, they're dipping all the time. They seem to have lost their spark, and I'm not so sure they'll do as well as they did last season.
There was this huge assumption at the start of the season and in the early weeks, wasn't it, that Liverpool everything was in place, it was all sorted, they were going to mount a title challenge, but it's all just slightly fallen apart, hasn't it?
Yeah, they don't seem to be the same intensity now about their performances. Defensively, they're not looking as secure. Even the Watford game, I went to that game where it was a 3-0. It wasn't really a 3-0 match. They weren't at anywhere near the fluent best. So I think they do, unless they start getting back to that early season form, I can't see them winning any of the big prizes by the end of the season.
OK, before we get Mark's Champions League opinions, Jason, give us a show of betting from Paddy Power on the Champions League.
Yeah, so Man City still favs at 7-2. We've Barcelona 5-1. Top price Juventus at 6-1. PSG now in the 8th. Bayern Munich there at 9-1, Real 12-1, best price on them, Atletico 12-1, Liverpool now out to 16s, you can have Dortmund at 33s and United at 40s.
Mark, what was the thing that changed your preconceived opinions most?
Maybe it was the PSV Eindhoven, actually. I know they're a team that's out of the competition, but they've been really unlucky. They absolutely gave Barcelona a right going over. You have a look at the expected goals, it was like 3.1 to PSV, which... it's almost unheard of, really, for a team that's that big outsiders. They lost the game 2-1. But if you're having a look at sort of the Eredivisie overall, they're 5 points clear of Ajax, who themselves are showing up really well in the Champions League. So maybe this is a good time for Dutch football again. If you go, they're through to the Nations League semi-final. So things are on the up. And, that game, I don't think, can't be seen as a gimme for Inter at home to PSV. Everybody assuming that Tottenham will have to win against Barcelona. If PSV play with the same sort of intensity as they did against Barca, they could get something at
San Siro. Can they get a UEFA Cup place or not?
No, I think that they're out. But I just think, mate, for Dutch clubs, it's still quite, there's a lot of prestige around playing in the Champions League. You know, the Eredivisie, most weeks, they haven't really got a game. They're just going to win them. And I thought they showed up really well against Barcelona.
So you're not giving up on Tottenham getting through then?
No. PSV, I don't think the prices have been done for that game yet, but they're going to be priced up as absolute no marks because it's a game they've got nothing to play for, etc. They may just be able to give Inter a sterner test than the odds are going to
Are you
suggest.
Going over there to cheer
I'm
your
not,
boys
I'm not going
you're
to
not
Barcelona. It was really close to Christmas and struggled
we've
to.
We've got memories of that place.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, the overnight.
Last time we went, took 5 days to get home, didn't
true,
it?
True,
bloody
true.
Volcano. Jason, what's your big conclusion from those 2 days of action?
I don't think we learned much new, really. I'd follow up on what the boys have said there. PSV, absolutely. Like the first game against Barcelona, they were 1-0 down with 20 minutes left and created a lot of chances. They lost the game 4-0, but were still unlucky. Then they were winning at home against Inter, and their keeper makes a howler, and they end up losing that game. So I think PSV have been very unlucky. I thought Lyon were very impressive against Man City, and I think that'll feed into the last 16. I think we're going to have a stronger second pot than what we've had in recent years. Like, a big advantage Liverpool had last year in the run to the Champions League final was that they got Porto in the last 16 and did a job on them. So I think the second pots are, any team in that is going to be quite difficult. To follow up what Dan says about PSG, opinion-wise, my opinion on Neymar was quite low before the match, and it's gone even lower now.
Why?
Phenomenal footballer. He was really impressive in the first half when he gets that ball. He's that burst of speed, play the 1-2s and get away. But I just thought his carry-on last night was ridiculous. The same from Tuchel on the touchline. Is like Tuchel's like a Bond villain, and Neymar is one of his little associates. And Tuchel was just shouting at the ref from the start of the match till the end. I mean, like, you'll teach anyone, as soon as you start shouting, you've lost the argument. Like, so if he's like that in the first minute, where's he going? But Neymar, this...
Who says that? Who says when you start shouting, you lose? I don't believe that, Jason.
No, look, Neymar, I've no issue with the rainbow flick, because I thought it was actually a great way to play, given the two players in front of him. But he's just, his rolling around was ridiculous. Milner's tackle on Di Maria won the ball and, you know, gave him a bit afterwards, which was perfectly fine. It's a shame he didn't do that on Neymar, but if he did, you know... Look, Neymar probably could be dead after, to be honest.
Okay, one word answer, lads, unless the team has got two words or even three. Who wins the Champions League, Dan?
Man City.
Mark?
Yeah, Man City.
Jason?
Man City.
Okay, interesting. Right then, my favourite division this year is the Championship. Absolutely superb. And there's some absolute mayhem going on there. Villa 5, Forest 5. What a game that was. So, Mark, Mark, we'll start with you. What did we learn from the Championship?
Well, I only saw one game. I saw the whole game.
You only watched one?
Yeah, I watched the whole game of Preston against Middlesbrough. So, I'll speak about that one. Actually, I think Preston are in a false position. Bottom half Championship team at the moment. Had a terrible start. Starting to pick up now, and I thought they played really well against Middlesbrough. First half, anyway, they've got quite a lot of injuries. Alex Neil was saying that they've got six players out, and five of those would be first teamers. So that is a problem, maybe, if you're looking to back them over the next week or so. But I definitely think as a lot of those players come back, they could be a team to follow. Brown played in the 10 position, was really good. Barker's on loan from Man City on the left, another player that gave Middlesbrough a really tough time. And Middlesbrough, you know, defensively best team in the Championship. And even up front, they've lost Robinson there, their main goal threat. But actually, I thought Lewis Malt played quite well up there. So I think that Preston are a team that are going to finish in the top half. If anybody was going to win that game against Middlesbrough, it was them.
Excellent. Jason, before you give us your thoughts on the Championship, give us the latest show from Paddy Power.
Yeah, so we have Leeds favourite at the moment at 7-2, Norwich 9-2, West Brom 9-2. We have Sheffield United next, then in the market 11-2 for us. We'll have Middlesbrough top price there at 13-2. Then you can get 12-1 on Derby, 14-1 on Villa, 20-1 on Forest, and then Stoke at 40s.
What do you make of it all, Jason? Fascinating division, isn't it?
Absolutely fascinating. It's just hard to know week to week. Obviously, I was watching Liverpool PSG last night, but checking the scores and like 20 minutes into that Villa match last night, 2-2, I thought like they were playing without keepers or something. It was madness. But it's like we've a very good Championship expert in here, Dave, and he'd be tipping up Leeds and Sheffield United as the two best teams still in the league. Just looking at the ratings, expected goals, and like they had big wins. Even Sheffield United rested a few as well. And they're playing, I think, at the weekend as well, which will be interesting now to see. We're not that keen on Burrow. Like, it's Tony Pulis doing what he does best, I suppose. West Brom needed a couple of set pieces to beat Swansea as well last night. It was a good win, but we're still not convinced by Darren Moore. And look, Norwich were on a bit of a run, but we're not sure how long that's going to last either. But it's just really good to watch, really. Like, every team's beating every team, really, in it.
Yeah, fantastic. Dan?
Yes, consistency generally wins the championship, and I look for consistency of performance, and for that reason I think Leeds are the worthy favourites. So they've had quite a few injury problems and are still, you know, churning out plenty of victories, and they're doing it with a good style of football as well. I think they've got a great chance of going all the way. They've been linked with signing a striker in January. If they do that, that could really bring everything together. I fancy them. I think Villa could come with a late run because they've got so much going forward, but they need to address the issues at the back. And they've only really got two recognised centre-backs at the club, Tuanzebe and Chester, who was an injury doubt for the last couple of games. They're playing him. I don't know how fully fit he is. And the goalkeeper, Nieland. I've been watching a lot of Villa games this season, and he makes errors, you know, far too many errors, letting a... Could have won the game 5-4 the other night. He's let a goal go in right at the near post and cost them another 2 points. So those issues need sorting out for Villa.
OK, so do I take it that Leeds are your championship
Leeds
tip,
for
Dan?
Me at
Who
the
are
moment,
yours,
yeah.
Mark?
Dan mentioned consistency wins the day. I mean, I still think Middlesbrough, because they don't concede any goals, I think they could finish second. And then maybe one team is good enough to sort of go beyond them, but I don't see two teams getting past them.
OK, and Jason, who's your fancy?
Yeah, I'd be quite sweet on Leeds as well. It's just with Bielsa as well, there's always that question mark over the burnout factor. But
because he trains them so hard, doesn't he, early doors, yeah?
Yeah, and they work so hard. I think we mentioned that clip there. You've seen six or seven Leeds lads chasing one player back there. Can't remember the match there about two weeks ago. Like, they just work so hard. And it is, you know, quite an attritional division to be in. But at the moment, I'd happily stay with Leeds, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Right then, we've got, as I said before, a full midweek Premier League programme. So I'll very quickly whiz through the games. Boys, you've got one tip each, okay? On Tuesday, it's Bournemouth, Huddersfield, Brighton, Palace, West Ham, Cardiff, Watford, Man City. On Wednesday, it's Burnley versus Liverpool, Everton versus Newcastle, Fulham, Leicester, Wolves, Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal and Tottenham, Southampton. Jason, give me one tip out of that lot.
I'd be tipping up Bournemouth at home to Huddersfield. The reason being, Bournemouth are away to Man City. If Man City do what Man City do, Bournemouth mightn't have to show up for the second half and could just concentrate on that game. Whereas Huddersfield will be putting all their efforts into a home match against Brighton. That's a must win really for them. So I think Bournemouth depend on results.
Okay, Dan?
Chelsea at Wolves at a shade of odds on. I think they've been really consistent against the lesser teams, and Wolves are looking like, you know, possibly one of the lesser teams after they were awful against Huddersfield recently.
Okay, and Mark.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a treble. I think that the big teams will steamroller the kind of minnows, if you like. Man City to win at Watford, Liverpool to win at Burnley, Tottenham to beat Southampton at Wembley. Pays about 5-4. I'd rather be a backer than a layer.
Okay, the final question. I want to tap into your brains and your analysis and your strategy. And the question is, what are the most and least important factors in assessing a football match? Dan, when you come to a fixture, what do you look at first, and what are the kind of red herrings that you tend not to get too fussed about?
Players, really, is what I look at. Who's the key players? I try to work out who the important players are in each team and who maybe the weak links are. And I use kind of stats as a way to try and get around, if you know what I mean. I used to look at results, and results used to frame the market years ago, and I used to look at the story beyond that to try and get my edge. Now, I feel that shot stats often frame the market, and you have to try and find a way to get beyond that. And the way to get beyond it is just to know your teams and your players as well as you can, know who the strengths and weak links are, and use that when there's injury, suspensions, who's playing well. Go on supporter message boards, just do as much, like any form of betting, learn as much as you can. The more information you got, the better chance you got.
And what are the red herrings then? Probably the results.
Brilliant.
It's all change, isn't it? Mark? Yeah.
I think the most overrated is the result. I know that will sound ridiculous to some people. Maybe I spent too much time with Kevin Pelline. I was with him on Saturday, but I just think that you just watch hundreds and hundreds of football matches. You know how often the result doesn't tell the whole story. So when you go down the results on a Saturday or in a midweek, like without going beyond that result, like, you know, you can be totally blinded just by the result.
Result, I know it sounds weird, but it's actually just the outcome of a small number of specific incidents.
Yeah, and football's a low scoring game, tight margins, you know, bounce of a ball, and they change results in the short term. So I agree with Dan that, I mean, shot stats are definitely not underrated anymore, but you do have to know them. There's no doubt about that. So, I mean, I would say that is, you know, one of the most important things. And also, I would like to get as much info from the market as possible. So which teams are drifting every week, which teams are being backed, because you can get a picture of knowing who the... I know you sort of made fun of sort of the Asian syndicates before.
Bruce, no, not at all. But
yeah,
certainly wouldn't want to land.
No, exactly. I mean, so if you're sort of getting maybe the information from Tony Bloom's business and from Matthew Benham's business, you know, why would you not try to take that on board?
I wonder if there's actually something we could offer by way of a service there in terms of whether a team's been backed or laid. Might be something to think about.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll have our strategy meeting in private, don't worry. We'll carry on with the postcast. Jason, what about you? What are your pet fancies and the things that you probably discard that other people might consider to be important?
Yeah, same as the lads there. They've kind of touched on everything. And I think just the more information you can gather from different sources, the better. The more and more I study, the more I realise the actual match results or goals aren't as important as what you might think. But for examples, like if you look at first game of La Liga this season, Betis against Levante, like Betis went off 8-15 and you look at the match result and it was 3-0 Levante, and you're thinking, Jesus, was the market completely wrong on that? But Levante actually only had 4 shots on goal, and like the keeper in the Betis goal had an absolute disaster. So you need to see how the goals came about in the match. And then, like I say, you can look at shots, you can look at expected goals, but again, an expected goal can put you off. Stoke drew 1-1 with Brentford earlier in the season, and looking back on it, it seemed a fair result. Expected goals had Stoke in for about a goal. But if you look what the goal was like, a Afobe was basically a keeper mistake for Brentford, and a Afobe's basically got a tap in from a yard out, which is nearly a full expected goal. So Stoke created absolutely nothing in that match. But if you just looked at the match result or the XG, you'd be thinking, okay, Stoke actually probably did all right there. So that would inform then your future opinion on Stoke, the fact that like they didn't create anything in this match. Or Betis, okay, they got Bet 3-0, but they actually played quite well in the match. And like I say, the more information you can gather into it, including team news, I think is very important as well. If you can get an advantage on whether, you know, Hazard is struggling with an injury, is unlikely to play, you can get in there maybe just before the markets realise it. But yeah, the more information you have, the better chance you have of getting the right opinion on it.
Just quickly, Bruce, I think with expected goals, there's maybe a confusion with it in that, you know, too many people point out the occasions when it looks wrong and when it kind of... I think the expected goals and all the shot stats need to be taken as a collective over, you know, 20 games, because even expected goals, I think, will not paint a true picture in any given match. It's using that information as a collective to go with your team news and to go with various other things, and confidence. We haven't even mentioned confidence. I think confidence is real and needs to be factored in.
Yeah, momentum isn't, but confidence is. Sure. That's fascinating just, stuff. Go on, Jason.
Yeah, even just add to what Bruce says, like XG as well, even taking into account the team you're looking at, Atletico Madrid, if they go a goal up, they nearly shut up shop and they don't create any more chances. So their expected G is going to look very bad, but actually, you know, they're controlling the game, dominating the game and quite comfortable. So like I say, all the factors the boys have mentioned, you just have to take it all together to come up with that bottom line price that you're going to back or lay.
It's fascinating stuff, this, and I mean, it flies in the face of all that we normally get in terms of punditry, with people go, oh, they played well last time, so I fancy them, and all that old bollocks. But just, so if you're listening and you're interested in what the guys are saying, you might think, well, where am I going to get all this info? So I want you each to give the listeners and viewers one website that you wouldn't be without. Dan?
Probably the one I use most is Soccer Association, because it just gets you very, very quickly. You can get all of your, you know, your player stats, and that's what I look to. Even when I'm looking for team news coming in for lower league games, I'll have that ready so I can see if there's players that are coming in, whether they're regulars or not.
Okay.
And that's one
Soccer
I look
Association,
at.
Yeah, Dan, yeah. What about you?
One thing we haven't mentioned is price. I mean, price is the most important thing, really. I mean, I sort of assume that people realise that. I'll give two out just for expected goals, because people often ask about expected goals. One would be Understat, and the other one is the 538, Nate Silver's one, the US politician, who political expert. So there's two there that do a lot of expected goals.
Understats
stuff.
And not and Understat 538.
And 538.
Okay, and Jason?
Yeah, Understat and 538 are very good resources. And to throw into that, not necessarily for XG, but whoscored.com is very good for preview and review of matches to see what happened and who played well.
Great stuff. Thank you, chaps. Really good food for thought there. I hope that is helpful to you as you tackle the battle with the bookmakers, which begins this weekend at 8 p.m. on Friday night. Yeah, we've got a live Friday game on Sky. It's Cardiff versus Wolves. Jason, how do Paddy Power bet on this one?
Yeah, so we have Cardiff 13-5, we've the draw 9-4, and Wolves 6-5.
Okay, Mark, lead on. Who's going to win this?
I think prices are about right. I'm looking into the bookings market. You may remember this game last year absolutely kicked off the gif that keeps on gifing, if you like. Warnock going absolutely bonkers at Nuno after Cardiff missed a couple of late penalties in that game. I actually went to the first match at Molineux, and you could tell it was, I think it started there and has gone on, because Cardiff were incredibly rough on Wolves. Like, I mean, off the ball, they were about as physical and as nasty as you could sort of imagine a Neil Warnock team to be. And I only saw the second game on TV, and you can't always see what's going on off the ball, but I suspect that there was sort of more of the same. So there's a bet to be had, I think, in Cardiff to get the first booking, which is 20-21. Peltier doesn't normally start in the Premier League, but he played both matches against Wolves, and they put him on Jota. I don't know if Jota will start. I mean, he kicked Jota for just all around Molineux, and he picked up. He wasn't playing, and then he came in for they brought him back to kick Wolves everywhere again for that second game. So he's 13-5 for a card. If he starts, I think that's a bet.
So if the caption comes up before, you know, in Sky Show, and they're all doing this and all that, it could just come as a clogger, couldn't
it? Yeah, he could. If he plays, I mean, he hasn't been playing in the Premier League. If he does, 13-5 to be carded from Arbiter Mariner looks a bet as well.
Peltier to give Jota pelters. Just about worked. Jason, what do you think is going to happen here?
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting game. I think Cardiff have given themselves a fighting chance now. They've won two of their last three at home. Although they're lucky, Brighton had an early red card in one of those games. But look, Neil Warnock, each interview he's doing, like, if they haven't got the result, he's saying the team is trying hard. Look, Cardiff are realistic about what they can achieve this season. But like I said, in two of those games that they won, they were coming from behind to win them as well. So there's a fighting spirit there. And just the way the league is developing, there's a few teams around them that, like I said, have a fighting chance. Wolves, on the other hand, they've only 1 point in their last five games. Personally, I thought they'd turn the corner just before the international break against Arsenal. But disappointing against Huddersfield, didn't really show up. So I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. They tend to be when Wolves play. 11 of Wolves' 12 games this season have had under 2.5 goals. So I'll be looking at backing that maybe. If you're looking for a goal scorer, televised game, Josh Murphy, he didn't start last week for Cardiff. They went a bit more defensive and played Harry Arthur on the left. But I think, look, he's averaging 3 shots per 90 minutes. So I think he's worth a bet, really, at 12-1 for the first goal scorer.
Great stuff. Dan?
Cardiff, for me, at the prices, I think it's a tight game. You know, overall, Wolves have probably got the better squad. But Cardiff are with a home advantage, and confidence, as we mentioned earlier, is a big thing. Winning two of the last three home games against teams that are kind of around. And Wolves are not that far ahead of them now. They've got 1 point from the last five games. And they were, the Huddersfield game,
they were appalling.
They were dreadful. They were absolutely,
absolutely
dreadful.
I mean, Nevis.
Yeah.
I thought, well, this is his chance. He was just
Jimenez as well looked like he completely lacked confidence going forward. They were bossed in midfield, and I just think that, and there's a vulnerability about them at the back, and Cardiff will load the box and you know, throw balls in there, and I just think it's a close game, and in that case, when the prices are quite a bit different, I'd rather be on the outsider.
Okay, thank you, chaps. We're off and running. We've got 6 Saturday Premier League games, and then we've got Derby Day on Sunday.
Introducing Paddy Power's Beat the Drop. We're giving every customer 30 days free entry and a grand up front. It's up to you to keep it. All you have to do is answer 10 questions correctly. Play now at beatthedrop.paddypower.com.
Welcome back. Let's spin through the 5 non-televised 3 p.m. Saturday games. I will read out Paddy Power's prices and the boys will tell us what will happen. We'll start with Palace Burnley, 4-7 Palace. 11-4 the draw, 5-1 Burnley. Mark.
Yeah, I can't back Crystal Palace at 4-7. I mean, they've only got 8 goals all season. I fully expect that Burnley will be in a relegation battle, but I'll go for the draw.
Fair enough. Jason?
Yeah, literally reading off my page here, I just think Palace too short, lack of goals at that price. I think Burnley plus one, that's round 6-4 is the bet.
Dan? I feel a bit conflicted here because I feel they're too short, but I also really expect them to win. So although I wouldn't be piling into the 4-7, I can see them winning the game fairly comfortably. So Palace 2-0.
I think we're due a great performance, and I think we're going to get it here. I think Palace over 2.5 goals. Huddersfield Brighton 7-5 Huddersfield, 15-8 the draw, just 15-8, and 23-10 the Albion. Jason.
Look, it was a good win for Huddersfield last week. They've picked up 7 points from 9 there, so I think, you know, they're starting to turn a corner. They had a very difficult start as well against Chelsea and Man City, and after the Liverpool match, Klopp came out in defence of Huddersfield, like, you know, looking after Wagner, his mate, and saying how difficult a start they've had. So I think their season is starting, only started recently now, and I think Brighton's away record is shocking as well. 19 of the last 20 they've failed to win in the Premier League, so I just think Huddersfield are probably worth a bet at these prices.
Dan, do you agree?
I agree, yeah. I just think there's a bit of similarity between Huddersfield and Newcastle, in that they both had these really tough starts, and they're both now getting some easy fixtures and starting to pick up and show that they're not such a bad team. And I thought that, I mean, we're moaning about Wolves saying how bad they were, but you've got to give Huddersfield credit. I thought they were superb.
The midfield credit, was, I thought. Moy was sensational,
Billing,
wasn't he?
Moy, Hogg, the whole midfield was superb. Pritchard looked lively and showed a bit of quality at times as well. They do lack a centre forward, but as a package, they're playing well at the moment. And Brighton, they're struggling at the moment. You know, losses at Everton and at Cardiff. I fancy Huddersfield odds against.
And even though Mounier's lost his eye for goal, he's still grafting, isn't he? Still
he's
getting
working
in the
hard,
right,
but they do need a bit more quality at centre forward. But I still think that the prices and the way they're playing, they're a bet here.
How do you see this one, Mark?
Yeah, I think it's going to be low scoring. That's why the draw is so short. Maybe Huddersfield to win 1-0. Brighton away from home are a very negative team. Couldn't put away Leicester, even though they were playing against 10 men for a long time last season. I mean, Huddersfield, you know, same goals as Crystal Palace, 8. So I'm not expecting them to run away with it. If they win, I think it'll probably be narrowly.
So gun unders.
1-0. One-nil Huddersfield.
Okay, lovely stuff. Leicester are 6-5 to beat Watford, who are 23-10. The draw is the same price. Dan?
I think this is one where the match result prices, I think they're spot on, so I'm trying to look outside of that. I know from watching Watford regularly that Delafoe is playing centre-forward. He's shown an ability to finish, including his disallowed goal against Liverpool, which he tucked away really nicely. I think he's going to score quite a few goals before the end of the season if he stays fit. He's 10-1 to score the first goal. Looks too big to me.
Lango?
Both teams to score. Leicester are the absolute kings of this. They were the champions of BTTS in the Premier League last season. 9 already in this campaign, which is second best. It's 10 at the moment, the highest. They've only found
who's highest?
Manchester United and Arsenal. But they've only failed to score once. Watford, as Dan said, have got some decent forward options, so I can see goals at both ends again.
And Jason?
Leicester unbeaten in their last 5 games, if you include the League Cup there during the week. It's Watford, they've won their first 4 games, so their form has been shocking really since. They've only won 2 in their last 9. So just taking all that into consideration, and what I think Dan was saying last week about Watford being a bit slow at the back with Cabasele still not getting back in the team. Vardy's got 4 goals this season. He's missed 3 games through suspension, but like, he's almost as good as Aguero if you include penalties. Like, he's in for an expected goal rate of about 0.76 a game. So I just think Leicester, with Vardy, if he starts, he did play 90 minutes in the cup, but if Vardy starts, I'd back Leicester for the win.
Righty ho, Man City 1-12, Bournemouth 22-1, the draw 10-1. Jason, away you go.
Look, we know all about Man City going forward, but defensively, they've been phenomenal this season as well. Look, Leroy Sané was winning balls back at left back that led to the first goal last week. Ederson in the goal, he makes the saves when needs be. You know, he 2-0 up there last week. Antonio gets through, Ederson makes his save. Man City have only conceded 5 goals this season, but 2 of them have been penalties given away in their last 2 home games by Ederson. So I'm trying to look at an angle maybe to get with Bournemouth. I wouldn't put anyone back in Bournemouth off at that price. You could do worse than throw a fiver on it. But I just think Josh King at 20-1 or any time 5-1. He's on penalties. He scored 3 from 3 this season. Has 5 goals already in total. And Man City are missing a few. Mendy, Bernardo Silva, De Bruyne, Godoin, and even Jesus is struggling. So they did have a tough game midweek as well. So just think Bournemouth will have a chance of getting a goal in this game. So I'd be going Josh King in one of the goal scorer markets.
And Jason is the first scorer. King, he tips King. Dan?
I think Man City are just going to be, you know, far too strong here. I think Bournemouth have they've kind of gone off the boil a little bit. Even the performance against Arsenal, I don't think it was quite where their performances were a few weeks ago. So even with the players missing, I see an easy home win. I'm going to sing off a very similar hymn sheet to earlier in the season. I've tipped Sterling first goal a couple of times. He's got 7 goals in the league, only one less than Aguero. He's still going off 9-2 first score. I think that's overpriced.
And Mark?
Yeah, 1 point Man City at 1-12. Bruce, you're
you can nick a little bit.
Another first goal scorer, David Silva. Didn't quite realise how good he'd been in terms of the goal scoring front recently. 8 goals in 17 games, but he scored in 5 of his last 7. And he's got the first goal in 3 of the last 4. So he seems to be, you know, pushing on a bit more. And yeah, I'll go for him to score first. I mean, you'd probably do worse than backing for Player of the Year as well, I would have thought.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we've got Josh King, we've got Sterling, and we've got, who was the other one?
David Silva.
Three first scorers. If you do them each way, you might cop or do any times, that's fine. And the other 3 p.m. game, Newcastle versus West Ham. Wide open this one, 7-5 Newcastle, 11-5 the draw, 2-1 the Amers. Lango, you went to Man City last week, or you went rather to West Ham Man City last week, and you said West Ham weren't quite as bad as the scoreline suggested. So are you tipping them here?
I'm tipping them to get a draw. They definitely weren't as bad as the 4-0 suggested, and I thought it was very interesting after the game that Guardiola actually had a pop at his City players, and they were laughing about it in the Match of the Day studios. They couldn't have watched the game, I don't think, properly in the studios, because Guardiola was absolutely right. They weren't at the level that you kind of expect them to be, which is a worry. But you know, for the rest of the league, they still win 4-0. But I thought West Ham did okay, certainly enough to suggest they could get something at Newcastle. Newcastle have won 3 on the spin. Teams just don't tend to win like these kind of bottom half teams win 4 matches.
I did a study on it once, and unless you're Big Six, it's really, really unusual to win 4 on the trot.
And 12 of their 13 Premier League games, there's been no more than 1 goal in it. So they are a team that play very much on the margins, Newcastle, and I think this one could just drop on the side of a draw.
What's your fancy, Jason Murphy?
Yeah, the Newcastle, they've won the 3 on the bounce, but I'm not convinced by them, especially those 2 home wins against Watford and Bournemouth. I still think they did well to get the wins there. Just following on from what we were saying earlier, don't be just looking at the match results and applying the same logic to West Ham. Only 1 win in 7 since beating United, but as Mark touched on there, you know, it wasn't a 4-0 necessarily against Man City. They lost to Spurs in the league 1-0 as well. Could have easily got something from that game too. Did Mark Noble sent off in that unfortunate game against Leicester as well. So, like, I think West Ham performances are there. So I'd be happy to back West Ham to win at those prices. If you're looking for a goal scorer, Newcastle have conceded 4 goals from corners this season. Balbuena, he had a chance against Man City there last week with a header. He scored off his own rebound against Leicester from a corner earlier this season as well. So 14-1 any time could be worth a look as well.
Balbuena. And Dan?
I'm going to go for Newcastle. For my sins, I put myself through watching Burnley and Newcastle on Monday night. Actually, wasn't too bad a game.
I'll tell you what, yeah. I sold passes in that game. It's one of the most disastrous football matches that I've ever seen. Honestly, I sold at 6.10 and it made up 870. It was an absolute disaster. So while you were sitting there thinking, this isn't too bad.
Yeah. And one of the reasons is because Newcastle played some good football, didn't they? They controlled the game.
It was more the fact that once they scored early, they just retreated. And yeah. Burnley's centre-backs were knocking, the back four were knocking it aimlessly to each other. The 611th pass took place in the 58th minute. No. It was horrific. Yeah.
I thought it wasn't just meaningless possession. I thought they were creating, you know, good chances. Could have had a couple more goals. And I think there's a confidence now flowing through a little bit more of this Newcastle side. And I also think they're better at the back than West Ham. The downside, well, they played all right against City. Some of the goals they conceded, they were all over the place at the back. And in a tight game, I would just fancy Newcastle to edge this.
OK, and the live game on Saturday, just the one, because we've got a triple header on Sky on Sunday. So 5:30 on BT, Southampton, Manchester United. Neither team remotely in form. Paddy Power go 100-30, Soton 13-5. The draw and 4-5 the visitors. Jason, what's your view on how this one might turn out?
Yeah, it's also a top of the table clash as far as next manager to be sacked is concerned. Mark Hughes 1-7, Mourinho 15-2. We actually seen money overnight as well for Paulo Sousa. He's been backed in from 10-1, currently into 4-6 to get the Southampton job. Apparently, he was in the stands last week for the Fulham match. And I think it's a Chinese owner with Southampton, and Sousa was managing in China as well, so maybe that's the connection there. But I don't think it can go on much longer for Mark Hughes. Like I said last week, it's now only 3 wins in 21.
But it's always the ref's fault, though, Jason. It's never anyone else's fault apart from the ref.
The gas thing, I felt so sorry for him in the cup during the week. The young lad Martins missed an absolute sitter, and then they actually had a goal disallowed because of VAR. Because it would have stood in the Premier League game. You just can't catch a break.
Yeah, I know. They moan when it's not there, and they moan when it is there, honestly.
Yeah, just can't catch a break. But look, you can't be convinced about United as well. They're struggling. Lukaku hasn't scored. Hasn't scored in a while either. His last goal at home was the 31st of March. And, you know, since that, like, you know, Man City have scored 83 goals. Real Madrid have had 3 managers. And Sanchez has collected 12 million in wages. Now, we know that's since he last scored at Old Trafford. But we have a market up on Lukaku. When his next goal might be, 6-5, looking at the weekend. 25-1 if you think he waits and saves it for Liverpool on December 16th. But listen, to simplify it, I still think Southampton are worse than United, so I'd back United at 4-5 on the condition that Danny Ings doesn't start. If Ings does start, he has been struggling with a hamstring injury the last 2 weeks, then I'd back Ings at 7-1 for first goal scorer. He's got 4 goals this season already. He'll be on penalties. His XG per 90, including penalties, is about 0.67 of a goal. And that's what I do. So wait for team news and take it from there.
Good stuff. Thank you, Jason. Dan?
I'm going to go for Southampton. These teams, I was looking at a website of wage bills for the Premier League, and they've got to be, I mean, you can see why the two managers are under pressure. They're the most underperforming sides in the division. Southampton have got a middle of the table budget and they're in the bottom three. Man United have got the top budget in the league and they look nowhere near the top four. So I mean, they're both massively underperforming. Southampton, 5 of their next 8 games are against big six teams. Where they are, they're probably going to have to look to win one of them. I mean, out of the big six teams they're going to play, this is the one that I'm sure they'll target and think we there's a chance of winning this. I watched the United game against Young Boys. They were terrible. I mean, they would have been lucky to draw the game. The Young Boys, they weren't just... After the game, Mourinho and Phil Jones are talking as if they've been hit on the break. Rubbish. Young Boys are actually controlling the football match in the second half. And United, you know, they scored with a handball goal. They would have been lucky to draw. And they're playing so poorly at the moment.
They were
dreadful against Palace. Again, Palace probably should have won the game. So you're looking at it, and as bad as Southampton are, they're probably not a great deal worse than the two sides that probably should have beat them in the last two games. So at the prices, and they're at home, Southampton, I'm going to give them a chance
they'll
of winning.
They'll fancy this as well, won't they, Dan? They'll think, do you know what? United aren't playing great. I know we're not, but it's almost like
they're
a free
not playing
shot,
great, aren't? But they've not been terrible. The game against Watford and the game against Fulham, they've not been playing completely devoid of confidence. They play some decent football. I just think they're a bit overpriced.
Mark?
No, I like Manchester United in this game. I think the way that they're playing, I'm not sure, you know, being at Old Trafford is as much of a home advantage to them as it is. I mean, they've won 3 of their 5 away matches against teams below them. It becomes a really big story when they don't win, and they've lost to West Ham and Brighton. But, you know, they have won the other three. And I thought that in one of them, the Bournemouth game, second half, I know first half they were poor. Second half, probably the best 45 minutes they've played this season. Even though they didn't play well against Juventus, they still managed to win the game. And Southampton have won 4 of their last 38 Premier League matches, and 2 of those were against Swansea and West Brom, and no longer Premier League teams. The fans were singing to Hughes the other day, you're getting sacked in the morning. So I'm not even sure that, you know, it's going to be an intimidating atmosphere. You know, West Ham, a difficult away game. The Brighton fans were bang up for it when United went there and started slowly. I mean, the Southampton fans seem to just want Hughes out, and I'm not sure playing at home is that much of a big deal.
Okay, we will look at the 3 Sunday derby games next.
Introducing Paddy Power's Beat the Drop. We're giving every customer 30 days free entry and a grand up front. It's up to you to keep it. All you have to do is answer 10 questions correctly. Play now at beatthedrop.paddypower.com.
Welcome back, Bruce Millington, Mark Langdon, Dan Childs and Paddy Power's Jason Murphy, looking ahead to what Sky are calling Derby Day, because they've got 3 live Premier League games and they're all derbies. So we will rattle through them, starting with the 12 o'clock. Chelsea versus Fulham. Chelsea bound to be very hot favourites here, Jason.
Yeah, so you can back Chelsea at 1-6, the draw at 13-2 and Fulham attempting 14-1.
Mark, have you fashioned a bet out of this?
Team news related, whoever starts out of Morata and Giroud, shop around, you get 9-2 both of them. I think whoever's the centre forward in that sort of system would be the one for me. For all that we spoke the other day about, you know, last week, Ranieri could come in and sort out the defence. I mean, he didn't sort out the defence. They still conceded two goals. They've got good players up front, but I was looking at Chelsea to win and both teams to score. It's only about a 6-4 shot, and so in the end, I thought that didn't sort of jump out as value.
Even though David Luiz was being very David Luiz.
Yeah,
isn't he?
I mean, he did. I mean, you can sort of look at that two ways. You could say that, you know, Chelsea were bad, but I think Tottenham were exceptional as well, and Fulham can't play at that intensity nor that level really. And I expect Chelsea to control the game, and you know, for all that Fulham have got the attacking threat. I mean, they're just conceding too many goals. If you're having to score three against Southampton and four against Burnley to win matches, I mean, you know, you're still in a world of trouble. So Chelsea to win pretty comfortably, whoever starts up front.
OK, and of course you can back them both before you know the team news, and whoever doesn't start, you get your stakes refunded. Jason, what's your view on this one?
Yeah, I thought Chelsea were very disappointing against Spurs. Sarri thought so as well. Tottenham could have won the game 5 or 6-0, but the three goals they did score could have been easily prevented. The first one, Ali's header, Jorginho is the first man, and like, he's not the tallest, you should always have a tall man just to clear that poor free kick that comes in. Kane got too much space for the second, question marks over Luiz, and kept in the goal on that. And then Jorginho running with Son for the third goal. Ian Wright actually made a very good point on Match of the Day, the difference between Jorginho and Kante. If Kante had been playing his normal role, then Kane does not get the space to pick up the ball for the second goal. And if he's playing his normal role again, he's back with Son when he's running down the wing, and he stops Son getting into the box and scoring that goal, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm not as sweet on Chelsea. I know it's a home game in the Europa League, so it shouldn't affect them too much. Whereas Fulham, look, dilly-dong. Ranieri, he's, you know, maybe he's going to start waking them up, and we're going to start getting a bit of value out of Fulham that we've been missing out on this season. The worst load start against Southampton, it was 33 minutes before I had the first attempt. But just some simple things. Look, he's playing Session and Schürrle up high and wide with Mitrovic. So Mitrovic is going to get service out of two of them, and he's going to get goals. He put in Chambers in beside Sarri. Sarri's actually a very good player. He was linked with Barcelona at one stage. So I think defensively, maybe not for this weekend, but he should get them sort of going forward. And Carney's back as well. He's missed a lot of this season, but arguably their best player from last season too. So I'm looking to get with Fulham on an angle on this. So I think Mitrovic anytime at 3-1. I think both teams to score at 10-11. Or if you wanted the bigger price, Fulham +1 at 5-1.
Do you think when Fulham are 20 points cut off at the end in May, we'll still be finding ways to tip them this season?
Yeah, good
they
thing.
Owe us. Yeah. Mind you, they did us all right last week. Dan, what's your conclusion on this game?
Yeah, I think it might take Chelsea a little bit of time to get going in this one. A bit of a confidence knock after that. That was not just the loss to Spurs, but the manner of it. They were really, really poor. I think the other side of the coin, you've got the boost of Ranieri coming in. They started that game against Southampton without really a lot of confidence and were very slow starting. But as the game went on, when they got the noses in front towards the end, they did see the game out. I think there will be, with his, you know, tactical changes he's made there, as he's made with Chambers, they're playing, you know, in that role, could start to see him get a little bit more solid as time goes on. And so I think it might just take a bit of time here for Chelsea to work their way into the game. So I'm going to go for draw half-time, Chelsea full-time at 16-5.
OK, if you're under a little bit of pressure from your better half on Sunday, you might want to skip the 12 o'clock game, because we've got two absolute crackers coming up. 2:05 is Arsenal versus Tottenham, and 4:15 Liverpool-Everton. Let's do the North London derby first. And how do Paddy Power bet?
Currently it's Arsenal 6-4, the draw 5-2, and Tottenham 13-8.
And lead on, Jason, who wins?
I think Tottenham. I think they could be favourites come kick-off. Lacazette, I think, missed last week as well for Arsenal. Tottenham looked very impressive against Chelsea. They started their best front four last week with Eriksen, Ali, Son and Kane. Eriksen and Son didn't start midweek, so I fully expect them to be ready and rearing to go for this on Sunday. Also, Alderweireld and Vertonghen played at the back as well against Inter. So that'd be reassuring if you could get the two of them back. As well, Arsenal are still 8 or 9 points better off than they should be based on performances and XG. And I think some of their poor performances have actually come at home to the likes of Watford, Everton and Wolves, who should have got better results coming away from the Emirates than what they actually did. And this Arsenal run that they're on, like, I'm not convinced by it. Like, they've drew 4 of their last 6 games. This run also includes 2 wins in the League Cup at home to Brentford and Blackpool. And it also includes the Europa League stuff as well. They're coming off the back of a trip to Ukraine as well. And historically, you'll see the last 5 years, Premier League teams always tend to suffer coming into a weekend off the back of a European game. So I'd happily take Tottenham on, you know, if they go 13-8 or even if they go a little bit shorter, I'd happily back them. Kane, I think he has 7 goals in 7 games against Arsenal in the Premier League. Only once in the Premier League he didn't score against them. So I'd be looking at Kane for first goal score. Mike Dean is also refereeing it as well. And if you YouTube Mike Dean celebrating goals, the two videos that come up is Tottenham against Aston Villa celebrating a Tottenham goal. And the other one is Tottenham against Arsenal celebrating a Tottenham goal. I'm not one for conspiracy theories, but it's just another interesting angle to factor in.
Come on, what are you suggesting there? You know I'm very defensive of refs, and particularly Mike Dean, who I think is one of the most unfairly maligned people in the whole of sport. Come on, Jason, what are you getting at there?
I just think he likes being centre of attention, and I think it's quite humorous, his celebrations, or what look like celebrations after these goals. But I think he's one of these refs that he likes to be centre of attention, which... A good referee is just there to facilitate an enjoyment.
He did a good job well done. He gave himself a little fist pump. I think Mike Dean could be, honestly, he's been reffing in the Prem since 2001. I think he's an absolutely brilliant, brilliant ref, and it gets on my tits, to be honest, when people keep knocking him. But obviously, I'd take your point there, Jason. And no doubt when he awards Tottenham 3 penalties on Sunday, I will come back and tell you you were perfectly correct. So the neutral observer gives Tottenham a great chance. What do the Tottenham fans think, Dan?
First, I'm going to Mike Dean owes us actually. The fixture last season, that probably Mark remembers as well. There was a load of criticism of him going into it, and both Arsenal goals shouldn't have stood, and he was the referee. So sometimes it can work against you when a guy's got focus and everyone's saying he's pro Spurs. He actually cost Spurs the game there last season. But anyway,
Go on, Mark Hughes, carry on.
looking beyond that, I think narrowly, I would. Being a Spurs fan, as you'll be surprised. No, narrowly, I would go for Spurs. I don't underestimate, though, home advantage in these North London derbies is big. In recent years, there haven't been many away wins, but despite that, I do think Spurs are playing as well as they have all season at the moment. I think they got everything they wanted out of the Inter game. He's rested, to a large extent, Eriksen and Son. Got them to come back in fresh, won the game. Every area of the pitch is functioning well now. You've got Vertonghen and Alderweireld. I mean, there's a debate whether he'll bring Foyth back in. You know, that would weaken the Spurs bet. But Sissoko playing so well in midfield. You've got those four players up front now that haven't been playing together. Now they're all playing together, playing well. So Arsenal, I agree with Jason. I think the run they've been on, they're not necessarily as impressive as those results suggest. They've not really done it against big teams yet. Probably Liverpool at home was their best performance against a big team. So I would narrowly favour a Spurs win.
OK, and believe me, honestly, when Dan and Mark analyse Tottenham, they are always professional and neutral. Mark?
Yeah, the Tottenham. No. I'm going for the draw in this game. I mean, it used to be seen as like the goal-crazy derby and that there were some amazing matches. But actually, last 10 in the Premier League, 8 have been under... And there have only been 20 goals in those 10 matches. So I think that does bring the draw into play. Tottenham have not had a Premier League draw this season, but I don't read too much into that. If you follow the trends of recent North London derbies, Tottenham tend to start off very quickly and then get pegged back. And two of the last three at the Emirates that have finished in draws, Spurs were ahead at half-time. So that's about 14-1 shot on the double result, if you're looking to juice it up. Just a couple of stats that go against that goals one, though. Tottenham have scored in 29 of their last 30 matches in all competitions, which is a pretty good effort. But Arsenal have scored in 45 of the last 47 North London derbies. Two clean sheets in the last 47 North London derbies for Spurs. And I think the inferiority complex is going on Tottenham's point of view. I'm not sure it's even though they finished ahead of them the last 2 years, I'm not sure it's fully disappeared.
Okay, 4:15, it's Liverpool versus Everton, a game that everyone always gets very excited about, but which is often very, very disappointing. I find they play far too fast for their own good. It just gets very disjointed, bitty, angry. I think Kevin Pollin's stat is that it's the most card-heavy Premier League fixture down the years. But, you know, it is what it is. It will get a massive audience, and it's a fascinating betting contest for sure. Jason, how do Paddy Power bet on this one?
Liverpool 4-11, draw 7-2, Everton 7-1.
4-11, absolutely not for me. Is it for you, Dan?
No, I totally agree. I just think that price is just way too short. I mean, I've spoken about how the Liverpool's performances have been tailing off, you know, for quite a few weeks now. You know, and to play this game off the back of that, such a tough game in Paris, is a far from ideal preparation. And the other side is Everton are on the up, playing some nice football under Marco Silva. You look at the team. I mean, last year they went there, got a 1-1 draw. I know they were awful, Everton, and we got the late penalty, but they still got a draw there with a team that's nowhere near as good as the side they're going to there with this week, and with a better preparation. So I just think, you know, because of the prices are so wrong, Everton all draw double chance for me.
There's plenty of 1-1s in this down the years, Mark, isn't there?
That's what I mean, they're at Goodison more than Anfield. Right. I mean, Everton have got a terrible record, actually, in Merseyside derbies. No win in 17. Last time they won at Anfield, Kevin Campbell got the goal. There were 3 red cards in that game as well. So I was just talking about the inferiority complex Tottenham-Arsenal. I think there definitely is one in this game. But at the prices, I can't be back in Liverpool after the game they had in Paris on Wednesday. Everton had a 3 week. So I think the draw actually is the way I'd be looking. If you look at Everton, the way they played against Chelsea, very tactically shrewd, I felt, in that game. They've got pace on the break with Richarlison and Theo Walcott to maybe trouble Liverpool, and Sigurdsson's playing well. Gomez is controlling the midfield. Digne and Mina at the back are players that have come from Barcelona. So I think Everton I think this is a good opportunity for them to get a draw. I don't fancy them to win purely on the basis that, you know, Liverpool have only conceded 1 Premier League goal at home this season, and that was in the game against Cardiff. So they are tight at the back. If you wanted a couple of first scorers, I don't know, Nick Jason's sort of starring role, but Mina is definitely one of those that can get on the end of set pieces. And I think Van Dijk's a first scorer waiting to happen for Liverpool.
I didn't think you were allowed to call him just Mina. He's one of those players, you know, like Andy Fay and all those. Yeah. Everyone calls him Yerry Mina. That's the first time I've ever heard him just called Mina. Okay, Jason, what do you fancy here?
I'd back up exactly what the boys are saying. Just to give another point, Liverpool, if you look before this season, the last 5 seasons of English teams, how to perform after playing in Europe midweek, Liverpool get 23% worse points per game after Europe. So they would average about 1.9 points per game, but it drops to 1.4. The fact it's a derby as well, I don't think that's factored into that price in Liverpool. So I'd be going with Dan, maybe Everton plus one or double chance there at 2-1. Mark is after teaming it there. There must be a camera in here watching me or something, because Van Dijk on set pieces there at 22-1. He's got 2 there for Holland. He hasn't scored yet for Liverpool, but Everton have conceded 4 goals from corners already this season. So I think if you're going to Liverpool angle, Van Dijk is definitely worth a look.
Can you believe it, you lucky people? You are getting all this knowledge and all this insight for free. Absolutely superb stuff, chaps. All that remains is that we get the naps.
This will not be beaten.
We'll get mine out of the way first. I vowed never to tip or back odds on teams in the Championship, but I'm pretty sure that Forest are too good for Ipswich. They're 4-7. Mark, what's your nap?
I'm going to the FA Cup. First of all, I think if Eintracht Frankfurt come out of their Europa League game okay on Thursday night, it maybe would be that against Wolfsburg, but I am always wary of that Thursday night match. So I'm going to go FA Cup, and it's Grimsby draw no better way to draw specialist Chesterfield. They haven't won in 19 league games, Chesterfield. They've had 9 draws in a row in the National League, but the fans really turned on Mad Dog Martin Allen in the 1-1 against Bromley in midweek. They were mocking the long balls and the set pieces and stuff like that. So I'm not sure home advantage is going to be worth that much to them. Grimsby, 1-5. And I spoke to a friend who knows a League 2 player that played against Grimsby recently, and he said they're definitely in a false league position. They then beat MK Dons in the FA Cup. They've scored 5 against Tranmere. And if they can look after big Tom Denton, the Chesterfield striker, I think they'll be OK.
OK, Dan?
I would go FA Cup as well. Shrewsbury at home to Scunthorpe in the All League One tie. Danny Coyne's the caretaker manager at the moment, but he's doing a really, really good job for them. A few bits of talk that he might get it long term. They've had 4 wins in 5 games. Got an informed striker, Fikiri Okenna-Bihi, who's scoring a lot of goals at the moment, 5 goals in the last 4 games. Scunthorpe got a load of injuries at the moment, got the worst defence in League One, and midfield injuries to Funzie Ojo and Matt Lund. I think I've mentioned previous weeks they're key players for them. So Shrewsbury for me.
And Jason?
Yeah, I'd go to La Liga on Monday night, Levante against Athletic Bilbao. Levante got a 2-2 draw last week. Okay, it was against Huesca, who were the worst team in the league. But again, just to touch back on what we were saying, they had a couple of players suspended, including their best player, Morales, in that match. So he'll be back for the game against Bilbao. Whereas Bilbao are really struggling. They haven't won in their last 8 games, and they've a couple of suspensions coming into this match. They have a regular centre-back, Alvarez, Yuri, left-back, who's in the Spanish World Cup squad, and even Yuri's backup is injured. And also one of their creative players, Raul Garcia, is also struggling with an injury. So all that factored in, I think Levante at 2-1 is just too big a price, and I'd be tipping them.
Lovely stuff. Weekend plans, Jason, what are you up to?
I'm working Saturday, and then Sunday, touch wood, it'll be just watching more football.
Dan, what about you?
Yeah, watching football, and my son's asked me to put the tree up on Sunday as well.
So, really?
I know, yeah, he's on about it all the time.
Really?
So, yeah.
You're going to go real or artificial?
No, artificial. Yeah.
Okay, and Mark, where are you this weekend? What game are you taking
I'm going to take in Southend v Barnsley in the FA Cup on Saturday. So, Barnsley are one of the most talked about teams in League One. Just been on a little poor run recently, so see if there's anything in that. Sunday, I actually was invited to the... somebody asked me, said I've got a spare ticket, Arsenal-Tottenham, but I'm sports editor.
I can't do a swap.
Not really, because, I mean, I'd want to drink about 10 beers during it as well, so then I'll come back in no sort of state. So, no, in the office on Sunday.
Oh, blimey, OK. I've got to be slightly careful because I've been invited to Newbury on Saturday. I said, I'm really sorry, I can't go. I've got a prior engagement. And I'm at Palace, all right? So I'm Palace Burnley Saturday. And then it's my birthday Sunday. So if I've ever got a chance of watching 3 Premier League games on the trot, it's then. I'm still long odds against. Never mind. Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Jason. That was absolutely wonderful. It's always great to listen to your wisdom and your absolutely fantastic tips. Hopefully there's plenty of winners in there. If you do enjoy these shows, please make sure you rate, review and subscribe wherever you're listening. I am back with Paul Keighley, Frank the Tank Hickey and David Jennings tomorrow to look ahead to a bumper weekend of racing. We've got a racing review show on Monday and then the final golf podcast of the year with Stephen Ian next Wednesday. So do please join us for them. But if you can't, we'd love to have you back next Thursday for another Racing Post Weekend Football Podcast.
Introducing Paddy Power's Beat the Drop. We're giving every customer 30 days free entry and a grand up front. It's up to you to keep it. All you have to do is answer 10 questions correctly. Play now at beatthedrop.paddypower.com.